Respiratory applications. This lecture explores comprehensive respiratory applications within biofeedback and neurofeedback frameworks, emphasizing the importance of assessing and training healthy breathing behaviors. It begins by addressing the rationale for including respiratory assessment in psychophysiological stress profiles, highlighting the relationship between dysfunctional breathing and medical and psychological conditions. The lecture then details the process of respiratory assessment, including tools, indicators, and clinical decision-making based on end-tidal carbon dioxide monitoring. It continues with an extended section on healthy breathing practices, correcting misconceptions about oxygen needs, and teaching effortless, abdominal-paced respiration. The instruction expands to include behavioral strategies such as proper clothing, posture, and breathing patterns that optimize physiological function and support autonomic regulation. Subsequent sections focus on methods to help clients become aware of and recover their natural breathing reflex, particularly in the context of chronic overbreathing. The use of breathing apps and pacing tools is presented as a practical solution for clients needing daily reinforcement and structure. Demonstrations and guidance from experienced clinicians are discussed to help translate principles into practice. The physiological effects of healthy breathing, including vasodilation, nitric oxide release, and enhanced vagal tone, are examined in detail. The lecture then turns to the clinical relevance of hyperventilation syndrome, including symptom presentation, population demographics, and contraindicated practices like paper bag rebreathing. The final portion covers evidence-based respiratory biofeedback interventions for asthma and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, COPD, describing underlying pathophysiology, multimodal protocols, and outcome data from randomized controlled trials. The session concludes with practical takeaways for respiratory intervention and an integrative summary of its clinical importance. Respiratory applications. Respiratory applications in biofeedback and neurofeedback form a crucial foundation for assessing and addressing autonomic dysregulation, particularly in clients with stress-related anxiety or respiratory disorders. Even when respiratory complaints are not the presenting concern, dysfunctional breathing patterns such as chronic overbreathing, breath holding, or thoracic dominance often emerge during psychophysiological assessments. These patterns can exacerbate a range of somatic and psychological symptoms, including dizziness, fatigue, irritability, cognitive fog, and panic. Their presence underscores the importance of respiratory screening in the early stages of treatment planning. Dysfunctional breathing may be both a contributor to and a consequence of chronic stress, with feedback loops involving the central autonomic network amplifying symptoms across physiological systems. For instance, the presence of hypocapnia, reduced levels of arterial carbon dioxide, can impair oxygen delivery to tissues due to vasoconstriction, producing both peripheral and cerebral symptoms that resemble medical emergencies. Incorporating respiratory assessment and training into a psychophysiological stress profile ensures that clinicians can detect maladaptive patterns early and differentiate between psychogenic and physiological origins of symptoms. Overlearned maladaptive breathing may also compromise the success of other modalities such as heart rate variability, HRV, biofeedback, or neurofeedback, where respiratory entrainment is necessary for optimal autonomic regulation. Thus, clients with asthma, panic disorder, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease may respond suboptimally to these interventions unless their breathing patterns are corrected. Slow-paced breathing can act as an anchor for attention, a regulator of autonomic tone, and a physiological gateway to improved homeostasis. By shifting to healthy respiratory rhythms, clients often report improved mood, focus, and physical comfort within just a few sessions. Beyond symptom relief, respiratory interventions promote client agency. Many clients feel empowered by the immediate and observable changes that breath training produces, including shifts in skin temperature, heart rate variability, and electrodermal activity. These physiological markers validate the client's effort and reinforce motivation. The accessibility and trainability of breathing behaviors make them a uniquely potent entry point for teaching self-regulation skills. While medications or complex cognitive techniques may be difficult for some populations, nearly all clients can learn to modify their breathing with appropriate instruction. The embedded nature of breath in autonomic reflexes, effective responses, and cognitive function also makes respiratory work a transdiagnostic intervention relevant across clinical populations. Importantly, collaborative care with physicians is often necessary to rule out primary medical conditions that influence breathing, such as obstructive lung diseases, cardiac disorders, or metabolic disturbances. In these cases, biofeedback practitioners can assist with behavioral retraining while referring to medical providers for diagnostic clarity and treatment. Such integrative care models improve diagnostic accuracy, protect client safety, and maximize therapeutic impact. For example, clients with anxiety-driven hyperventilation benefit from paced breathing protocols even as physicians manage comorbid cardiac risk or pulmonary inflammation. Moreover, biofeedback clinicians can often support patients in tapering off medications that exacerbate hypocapnia or dampen respiratory feedback under medical supervision. In summary, respiratory applications in psychophysiological care are foundational, diagnostically informative, and therapeutically powerful. They serve as both a screening mechanism and a clinical intervention that can enhance or constrain the success of broader biofeedback and neurofeedback treatment strategies. By recognizing and addressing dysfunctional breathing, clinicians strengthen their capacity to promote physiological coherence and psychological resilience. Breathing assessment. Breathing assessment is a foundational element of the psychophysiological stress profile and is indispensable in evaluating clients for both clinical biofeedback and neurofeedback interventions. This assessment extends far beyond respiratory rate and includes evaluating respiratory chemistry, behavioral patterns, muscle recruitment, and client awareness. Dysfunctional breathing can be subtle and is frequently overlooked even in clients presenting with non-respiratory complaints such as chronic pain, anxiety, fatigue, or cognitive impairment. However, shallow thoracic breathing, frequent sighing, and disrupted end-tidal carbon dioxide levels are often associated with impaired autonomic balance and heightened sympathetic arousal. For this reason, precise measurement of breathing dynamics, including the use of a capnometer to track end-tidal carbon dioxide, is crucial. Capnometry provides a non-invasive index of respiratory chemistry by measuring the partial pressure of carbon dioxide in exhaled air. Normal end-tidal carbon dioxide values range from 35 to 45 millimeters of mercury. Persistent readings below 33 millimeters suggest overbreathing and potential hypocapnia. Standardized assessment tools enhance diagnostic accuracy. One widely used tool is the Nijmegen questionnaire, a validated self-report instrument that evaluates symptoms associated with dysfunctional breathing, such as dizziness, blurred vision, paresthesia, and anxiety. When clients score above established cutoffs, it suggests that their somatic complaints may be linked to chronic hyperventilation. Another component of a comprehensive breathing assessment is the incorporation of stress trials, such as guided imagery or deliberate overbreathing, which allow clinicians to observe how the client's breathing responds to emotional provocation or exertion. These trials should be paired with recovery periods to evaluate the client's capacity for physiological restoration. Criteria for identifying dysfunctional breathing include low baseline end-tidal carbon dioxide, a stress-induced decrease of 20% or more in end-tidal carbon dioxide, and failure to return to at least 80% of baseline during the recovery phase. These indicators, taken together, guide the decision to implement structured breath training. A structured respiratory assessment also examines breathing patterns at rest. Practitioners should observe whether the client breathes through the mouth or nose, whether abdominal or thoracic expansion predominates, and whether breathing is irregular or effortful. Use of a respirometer allows for real-time tracking of respiratory rate and depth. A smooth, sinusoidal waveform reflects a healthy, coherent breathing pattern, whereas erratic or flattened waveforms may signal chronic dysregulation. Complementing these quantitative measures with electromyographic data from accessory muscles, such as the scalenes or trapezius, provides further insight. Increased electromyographic activity in these regions suggests inefficient breathing mechanics and heightened sympathetic activation, particularly if observed during relaxed baseline recordings. Medical consultation should precede respiratory biofeedback whenever serious underlying pathology is suspected. For example, Chronic hypocapnia can sometimes be a compensatory response to renal tubular acidosis or congestive heart failure. In such cases, breathing retraining to increase end-tidal carbon dioxide could worsen the underlying pathology. A physician should therefore evaluate any client with a complex medical history or unexplained dyspnea before respiratory interventions are initiated. This multidisciplinary collaboration protects the client and ensures that behavioral interventions are not contraindicated by medical risk. Moreover, such collaboration strengthens the credibility of biofeedback services and fosters interprofessional trust. The goal of a comprehensive breathing assessment is not only diagnostic, but also motivational. When clients view their physiological data, such as carbon dioxide levels, respiratory patterns, and muscle tension, in real time, they often become more receptive to the idea that their symptoms have a psychophysiological basis. This recognition enhances buy-in and primes the client for structured intervention. Many clients have lived for years with dysfunctional breathing that they did not know could be changed. Seeing the objective evidence of their dysregulation and learning that there is a structured path toward improvement can be profoundly empowering. In sum, breathing assessment is a dynamic, multifaceted process that integrates self-report, physiological measurement, and behavioral observation. It serves as a bridge between diagnosis and intervention, illuminating the often hidden influence of respiratory habits on emotional, cognitive, and somatic functioning. A careful assessment not only guides clinical decisions, but also initiates the process of client engagement and change. Healthy breathing. Healthy breathing represents the cornerstone of physiological self-regulation and underpins the effectiveness of many biofeedback and neurofeedback interventions. It is not merely the absence of pathology, but the presence of optimal respiratory function tailored to the body's metabolic needs. At rest, healthy breathing is slow, quiet, nasal, and primarily diaphragmatic, supporting efficient gas exchange and autonomic balance. The hallmark of healthy respiration is not the depth of breath, as often believed, but the preservation of carbon dioxide levels and the minimization of effort. Adequate carbon dioxide concentrations, specifically an end-tidal carbon dioxide between 35 and 45 millimeters of mercury, ensure oxygen is properly released to tissues through the Bohr effect. In contrast, overbreathing reduces carbon dioxide levels, triggering vasoconstriction and reducing cerebral and peripheral blood flow. This results in symptoms such as lightheadedness, tingling, and increased anxiety, often misinterpreted as signs of a medical crisis. Training healthy breathing begins by correcting maladaptive respiratory habits. Many clients present with thoracic or shallow breathing, excessive sighing, breath holding, or an irregular respiratory rhythm. These patterns often emerge from chronic stress, traumatic conditioning, or poor postural habits, and become overlearned through repetition. The objective of retraining is to restore slow, smooth, diaphragmatic breathing that aligns with the body's natural respiratory reflex. Ideal resting respiratory rates typically range from 5 to 7 breaths per minute, depending on body size, fitness level, and overall health status. Such a pace supports increased respiratory sinus arrhythmia, a marker of vagal tone, and contributes to emotional regulation, cognitive clarity, and cardiovascular resilience. Healthy breathing is most effective when reinforced through multisensory learning, combining verbal instruction, tactile feedback, and visual feedback from respiratory monitors. Clients benefit from observing changes in their breathing waveforms, end-tidal carbon dioxide, and heart rate variability during practice. These changes provide immediate reinforcement for adaptive behavior and help cultivate interoceptive awareness. Clients are encouraged to breathe primarily through the nose, which filters and humidifies air while producing nitric oxide that enhances vasodilation. During exhalation, using pursed lips can slow the respiratory cycle and prevent excessive loss of carbon dioxide. Training often includes lying supine with a weight or hands on the abdomen to reinforce the perception of diaphragmatic movement. Psychologically, healthy breathing fosters a sense of calm, grounded presence that counters hyperarousal states. Clients often report increased mental clarity, improved mood, and reduced somatic complaints after adopting a healthy respiratory rhythm. The reduction in effort required to breathe can be restorative in itself, as the body no longer over-recruits accessory muscles or stimulates unnecessary sympathetic output. Furthermore, clients with conditions like asthma, hypertension, or anxiety benefit from the downstream effects of improved autonomic balance, including increased baroreflex sensitivity and reduced inflammatory markers. Breathing thus becomes both a physiological and psychological regulator, a tool for moment-to-moment self-regulation and long-term resilience. It is essential to address barriers to healthy breathing, including fears related to suffocation, dizziness during training, and difficulty sustaining attention. Clients with histories of panic or trauma may need gradual exposure to diaphragmatic breathing, starting with brief sessions under supervision. Some clients initially report discomfort or increased anxiety when shifting away from their habitual breathing patterns, particularly if they associate slower breathing with loss of control. These reactions require normalization and framing within a therapeutic alliance, ensuring that clients feel supported and understand that these sensations are transient. Therapist modeling, paced auditory or visual cues, and structured homework assignments all facilitate the adoption of new patterns. Ultimately, healthy breathing should become an automatic, self-sustaining behavior. While initial practice is often structured and effortful, the goal is for diaphragmatic, coherent breathing to become embedded in daily life. Whether sitting, walking, or managing a stressful interaction, clients can use their breath to influence autonomic tone, restore physiological balance, and regulate affective state. Mastery of this foundational behavior enhances the effectiveness of nearly every psychophysiological intervention and contributes to global improvements in health, performance, and well-being. Common breathing misconceptions. Common misconceptions about breathing are pervasive in both clinical and lay populations and often hinder effective respiratory retraining. One of the most enduring fallacies is the belief that we need to take in more oxygen when we are anxious, tired, or unfocused. In reality, the atmosphere at sea level contains approximately 21% oxygen, and the exhaled air retains about 15%. This means that we only utilize roughly a quarter of the oxygen we inhale, and for most people at rest, oxygen levels are already near maximum saturation. The subjective urge to breathe more deeply under stress is usually a result of heightened arousal and distorted interoceptive awareness, not actual hypoxia. Paradoxically, taking deeper breaths in this context can lower carbon dioxide levels too much, compromising oxygen delivery to tissues through the Bohr effect and inducing symptoms like dizziness, numbness, or even panic. Another widespread myth is that deep breathing is inherently calming. This misconception stems from a confusion between depth and effectiveness. In practice, most deep breaths result in forced inhalation followed by rapid, unregulated exhalation, especially in anxious individuals. This pattern, often taught inappropriately in relaxation settings, promotes overbreathing and further reduces carbon dioxide. Effective breathing should be paced, slow, and effortless, emphasizing a longer exhalation than inhalation to engage the parasympathetic nervous system and optimize gas exchange. Breathing that is both deep and rapid is maladaptive, while breathing that is slow and effortless promotes physiological homeostasis. Clients must be taught that depth does not equal benefit unless it preserves respiratory chemistry and is integrated with correct pacing and muscle recruitment. A third misconception is that breath holding during stress or task engagement is benign. In reality, chronic breath holding, often seen during concentration, typing, or emotional suppression, can destabilize carbon dioxide regulation, increase sympathetic activation, and compromise attentional control. This pattern, sometimes called email apnea, reflects an unconscious freezing response and is associated with shallow thoracic breathing and elevated muscle tension. Over time, this behavior reinforces hyperarousal and diminishes vagal tone. Teaching clients to become aware of breath holding and to interrupt it with conscious exhalation and diaphragmatic re-engagement is essential for preventing autonomic dysregulation. Breath holding is not a neutral behavior. It has cascading effects on the central and autonomic nervous systems. There is also a mistaken belief that overbreathing or hyperventilation is always obvious and rapid. Many clients with chronic hyperventilation breathe at a rate that appears normal or even slow but exhibit consistently low end-tidal carbon dioxide due to shallow, rapid exhalations or irregular rhythms. These individuals may not notice any breathing difficulty, yet they often report symptoms such as fatigue, difficulty concentrating, or frequent sighing. This silent hyperventilation is especially insidious because it often escapes clinical detection without capnometry. Educating clients and clinicians about this phenomenon helps correct assumptions that only visible respiratory distress warrants intervention. Functional respiratory evaluation requires objective measurement and a nuanced understanding of breathing dynamics. Finally, many clients believe that breathing patterns are either fixed or too complex to change. This fatalistic view may stem from years of unsuccessful attempts to manage anxiety or chronic symptoms through willpower alone. Clients may also internalize the notion that breathing is purely automatic and not amenable to voluntary influence. While respiration is indeed regulated by both the brainstem and cortical networks, it is one of the few autonomic functions that can be brought under conscious control. Biofeedback allows clients to observe their respiratory patterns and modify them in real time, often leading to rapid and dramatic improvements in symptoms and overall well-being. Correcting this misconception empowers clients to take ownership of their physiological state and reinforces the value of sustained practice. In sum, dispelling these misconceptions is a critical step in respiratory training. Clinicians must take time to educate clients about respiratory physiology, normalize counterintuitive responses, and frame breath training as a learnable skill rather than a mystical or secondary technique. By providing accurate information and experiential evidence, therapists can replace myth with mastery and support the development of healthy, adaptive respiratory behaviors. Breathing overview. Breathing is a dynamic physiological process that reflects and regulates both metabolic demand and emotional state. Its primary function is to maintain homeostasis by matching oxygen intake and carbon dioxide removal to the body's metabolic needs. However, breathing also serves as a sensitive barometer of stress and a powerful mediator of autonomic balance. A coherent respiratory pattern balances frequency, breaths per minute, depth, tidal volume, and regularity to sustain optimal blood gases and support cardiovascular, neurological, and endocrine functions. At rest, most individuals function best at a respiratory rate of 5 to 7 breaths per minute. This slower rate enhances parasympathetic activity, increases respiratory sinus arrhythmia, and allows for greater coherence between the respiratory and cardiovascular systems. In contrast, higher respiratory rates, particularly if accompanied by irregular or shallow thoracic breathing, tend to activate sympathetic arousal and reduce physiological efficiency. Breathing involves a delicate interplay between carbon dioxide production, respiratory muscle mechanics, and neural regulation. When a person engages in moderate activity, carbon dioxide production increases, prompting a compensatory increase in breathing rate and depth to eliminate the gas and maintain acid-base balance. However, during periods of rest or mental stress, an increase in breathing rate may not reflect metabolic need, but instead may be driven by emotional factors. This mismatch leads to hypocapnia, characterized by low carbon dioxide levels in arterial blood, which results in vasoconstriction, decreased oxygen delivery, and reduced cellular metabolism. Although oxygen saturation, as measured by pulse oximetry, often remains high, the release of oxygen from hemoglobin is impaired, particularly in the brain. This is why even mildly elevated breathing rates can induce fatigue, dizziness, and anxiety-like symptoms in the absence of any structural pathology. Effective breathing should be flexible and context-dependent. The goal is not to enforce an arbitrary breathing rate in all situations, but rather to support respiratory efficiency through awareness, proper posture, and physiological principles. For example, breathing during exercise should be deeper and more rapid to accommodate increased metabolic demand. In contrast, when sitting at rest or engaging in cognitive work, slower, diaphragmatic breathing optimizes brain oxygenation and reduces cognitive load. Clients should learn to identify when their breathing is out of sync with their activity level and use brief interventions, such as 2 minutes of paced breathing, to recalibrate their breathing. Over time, This conscious practice cultivates a more automatic and efficient breathing response under both restful and stressful conditions. A key goal of respiratory training is to align breathing with the body's natural respiratory reflex, which is driven primarily by carbon dioxide levels in the blood. When carbon dioxide accumulates to a critical threshold, chemoreceptors in the medulla and peripheral arteries signal the body to initiate inhalation. Chronic overbreathing disrupts this reflex by inducing hypocapnia, which in turn blunts chemoreceptor sensitivity. This means the brain no longer accurately detects rising carbon dioxide levels, making it harder to maintain healthy breathing. Clients who override the respiratory reflex may feel the need to inhale too early, perpetuating a cycle of overbreathing and biochemical dysregulation. Training to restore this reflex involves lengthening the exhalation, delaying inhalation, and promoting smooth transitions between breaths. Respiratory retraining also incorporates attention to biomechanics. Diaphragmatic breathing recruits the diaphragm, a dome-shaped muscle that separates the thoracic and abdominal cavities. This muscle descends during inhalation, allowing the lungs to expand downward and promoting a pressure gradient that supports efficient air intake. Thoracic breathing, by contrast, relies heavily on the intercostal and accessory muscles, increasing energy expenditure and often leading to shoulder tension and neck pain. Clients who learn to engage their diaphragm effectively experience greater comfort, reduced fatigue, and enhanced autonomic stability. Simple techniques such as abdominal hand placement, use of light weights on the abdomen, or biofeedback displays can reinforce correct muscle engagement during training. In conclusion, healthy breathing is neither instinctive nor trivial. It is a trainable behavior that supports systemic physiological functioning and underlies successful psychophysiological regulation. Understanding the complexity and adaptability of the respiratory system allows clinicians to teach clients how to breathe in ways that restore balance, enhance resilience, and optimize performance. This respiratory overview sets the stage for specific strategies to refine breathing behavior, which we will now address in the next sections. Breathe effortlessly. Breathing effortlessly is a core principle in respiratory retraining because ease, not force, defines functional respiration. When clients are taught to breathe effortlessly, they are instructed to minimize muscular tension, avoid exaggerated movements, and allow inhalation and exhalation to occur in synchrony with their body's metabolic demand. This contrasts sharply with the common tendency to associate good breathing with dramatic chest expansion or audible inhalation. In fact, effective respiration is typically silent, smooth, and barely noticeable. The effortless breath mimics the act of smelling a flower, soft, gentle, and appropriately shallow, anchored in diaphragmatic rather than thoracic expansion. This breathing pattern minimizes sympathetic activation, promotes vagal tone, and ensures stable levels of arterial carbon dioxide. The emphasis on effortlessness also serves as an antidote to the over-efforting seen in many clients who are anxious or striving to perform well in therapy. These clients may unconsciously tense their shoulders, recruit accessory muscles like the sternocleidomastoid and scalenes, or overinflate the lungs in an attempt to do it right. Ironically, such effort undermines the goals of respiration training by increasing respiratory rate, reducing end-tidal carbon dioxide, and reinforcing the very dysregulation they aim to correct. The process of learning to breathe effortlessly thus requires unlearning counterproductive habits and cultivating interoceptive awareness. Clients need to feel what it means to let the breath flow with minimal interference. This is often achieved through slow exhalations, delayed inhalations, and a focus on abdominal rise and fall. Practicing in a quiet setting, lying down, or using a breath pacer can assist in tuning into these subtle sensations. Instruction in effortless breathing must be explicit, experiential, and reinforced over multiple sessions. Clients are often surprised to discover how habitual tension patterns interfere with their breathing. They may comment that they did not realize how much they hold their breath, use their shoulders, or contract their abdominals. Using electromyographic biofeedback from the trapezius or intercostals can provide powerful visual feedback that underscores the presence of this tension. When they observe that effort increases muscle activity and decreases respiratory efficiency, clients are more motivated to practice letting go of the muscular drive that has accompanied their breathing for years. This insight is often transformative. It shifts the narrative from breathing harder to allowing the breath to emerge. A critical element of this retraining is the timing of the breath cycle. The exhalation should be longer than the inhalation to support parasympathetic activation, and the pause after exhalation should be embraced as a natural part of the respiratory cycle. Many clients fear the pause, mistaking it for a sign of breathlessness or loss of control. In fact, the pause, when unforced, marks the restoration of the respiratory reflex and the resensitization of chemoreceptors to rising carbon dioxide. Allowing this pause to unfold without prematurely initiating the next breath reestablishes the body's innate respiratory rhythm. This is particularly important for clients who have chronically overridden their breathing reflex in response to trauma, anxiety, or somatic vigilance. Breathing effortlessly also requires creating conditions that support natural respiration. Clients should practice in environments free from distractions, wearing loose clothing that permits abdominal expansion, and sitting or lying in postures that do not compress the diaphragm. Practicing shortly after meals or during periods of acute emotional arousal may be less effective, as these states can alter respiratory patterns and reduce awareness. Clients may be instructed to create a routine around their breathing practice, using the same location, time of day, or sensory cues to build consistency. As with any behavioral intervention, repetition is key. A few minutes of daily effortless breathing will yield more benefits than a single, extended session filled with tension and uncertainty. Ultimately, effortless breathing is about restoration, not exertion. It invites clients to trust their bodies, relinquish control, and cultivate a relationship with respiration that is grounded in awareness and ease. As clients internalize this practice, they often report improvements not only in breathing-related symptoms, but also in mood, sleep, digestion, and overall well-being. Breathing becomes a refuge rather than a battleground, an embodied signal of safety, coherence, and autonomy. Discourage deep breaths. Clinicians must explicitly discourage the common habit of taking exaggerated deep breaths, particularly in clients presenting with anxiety, panic, or chronic stress. Despite popular belief, large inhalations are not inherently beneficial and often compromise rather than support respiratory physiology. When clients inhale deeply and rapidly, they typically expel excessive carbon dioxide during exhalation, inducing or worsening a state of respiratory alkalosis. This hyperventilation-induced hypocapnia reduces cerebral blood flow, constricts peripheral blood vessels, and shifts the oxygen-hemoglobin dissociation curve, impairing oxygen delivery to tissues. The net effect is a paradoxical decrease in cellular oxygenation, even when blood oxygen saturation appears normal. This disconnect between perceived need for oxygen and the physiological consequences of deep breathing contributes to a self-perpetuating cycle of overbreathing, somatic symptoms, and distress. Deep breathing often stems from the intuitive but incorrect assumption that discomfort during stress, such as dizziness, chest tightness, or cognitive fog, is caused by an oxygen deficiency. In reality, these symptoms frequently result from carbon dioxide depletion and its vascular and neurological consequences. Clinicians must educate clients that the solution is not more air but more balance, specifically, preserving appropriate levels of carbon dioxide by reducing respiratory rate and volume. When clients shift from forceful to soft, paced breathing, they typically experience reduced symptoms and improved regulation within minutes. The exhalation phase becomes particularly important as excessive exhalation drives down carbon dioxide levels and must be deliberately moderated. Teaching clients to exhale slowly through pursed lips can help preserve carbon dioxide and prevent abrupt reductions in end-tidal pressure. Additionally, the term deep breathing itself may be problematic and requires redefinition in therapeutic settings. Instead of emphasizing deep, which clients often associate with force or volume, clinicians can reframe the goal as low and slow breathing, emphasizing diaphragmatic engagement and minimal effort. Instructing clients to breathe as if gently smelling a flower or sighing with relief helps redirect attention from volume to sensation. biofeedback displays, such as capnometers and electromyographic feedback from accessory muscles, can reinforce this learning by demonstrating the physiological cost of overly deep breaths. When clients see that large inhalations reduce carbon dioxide and increase muscular tension, they are more likely to shift toward gentler patterns. This experiential feedback is often more persuasive than verbal correction alone. Some clients may initially resist abandoning deep breathing because they associate it with stress relief strategies from yoga, meditation, or athletic training. Clinicians must clarify that the goal is not to reject these practices, but to adapt them in context. For example, while deep inhalation may support performance during aerobic exertion, it is maladaptive during rest or anxiety. Similarly, in meditative practices, breath awareness, not breath volume, is often the therapeutic mechanism. Recontextualizing breathing goals helps clients reconcile prior learning with the current intervention. By understanding that breathing should vary according to physiological needs, clients develop a more nuanced and flexible respiratory strategy. Furthermore, chronic deep breathers often exhibit altered breathing reflexes. Their chemoreceptors become desensitized to carbon dioxide, and they may experience premature urges to inhale before carbon dioxide reaches its natural threshold. These clients may report feeling short of breath despite normal or elevated oxygen saturation. The antidote is not deeper breathing, but reestablishing the respiratory reflex through paced, gentle breathing that tolerates longer exhalations and post-exhalatory pauses. This process retrains the body to tolerate healthy levels of carbon dioxide and restores the regulatory feedback loop that governs respiration. Over time, clients report fewer urges to inhale, reduced anxiety, and increased resilience during stress exposure. Ultimately, discouraging deep breaths is not about restricting the breath, but about optimizing it. By shifting away from volume and toward efficiency, clients reclaim a core physiological rhythm that supports emotional regulation, cognitive clarity, and physiological balance. They learn that breath is not just a means to an end, but a signal of safety, readiness, and adaptability, capable of guiding them out of dysregulation and into homeostasis. Encourage clients to dress for success. Breathing training must be contextualized within the physical environment and bodily constraints that influence respiratory mechanics, and one often overlooked factor is clothing. Clinicians must advise clients to wear attire that supports, rather than hinders, diaphragmatic movement during both assessment and training. Tight clothing, particularly around the waist, abdomen, and thorax, can restrict abdominal expansion, forcing reliance on thoracic breathing and overactivation of accessory muscles such as the sternocleidomastoid, scalenes, and upper trapezius. This pattern not only increases the metabolic cost of breathing, but also reinforces sympathetic arousal and reduces the efficiency of gas exchange. Clients who arrive to sessions in tight jeans, compression garments, or restrictive tops may struggle to engage in proper diaphragmatic breathing, regardless of their cognitive understanding of the technique. The designer jeans syndrome is a term coined to describe the common phenomenon wherein fashion-forward clothing impairs respiratory training. This is especially problematic in populations that already experience high body tension, such as individuals with anxiety, trauma histories, or chronic pain syndromes. When abdominal expansion is restricted, clients may unconsciously elevate their shoulders and chest to compensate, creating a vertical rather than horizontal breathing pattern. This posture limits diaphragmatic descent and perpetuates thoracic dominance. As a result, even well-structured breathing exercises may fail to produce the intended benefits. Clients may feel they are doing it wrong or become discouraged, misattributing mechanical limitations to psychological resistance or incompetence. Addressing clothing as a variable in respiratory training demystifies the process and supports client engagement. Instructing clients to dress for success reframes clothing choice as a form of preparation and self-care. Clients should be encouraged to wear loose-fitting, comfortable garments that allow full movement of the abdomen and lower ribs. Elastic waistbands, breathable fabrics, and posture-friendly attire create an environment conducive to effortless breathing. This guidance is particularly important for in-home practice, where clients may default to restrictive sleepwear, work attire, or workout clothing that limits abdominal expansion. Some may benefit from practicing in dedicated breath training clothes, which psychologically signal a transition into therapeutic work and reinforce behavioral consistency. Clients who identify physical comfort as a barrier to breathing practice are more likely to maintain engagement when such obstacles are explicitly addressed and resolved. Beyond the mechanical effects, clothing influences body awareness and postural feedback. Tight belts, corset-like tops, or shapewear can diminish interoceptive sensitivity in the abdomen, making it difficult for clients to detect diaphragmatic movement. Over time, this can blunt awareness of internal states and reinforce dissociation from somatic cues. Reconnecting clients to their abdominal breath through tactile feedback requires eliminating unnecessary external constraints. Some clients may initially feel vulnerable when abandoning restrictive clothing due to body image concerns or trauma histories. In such cases, the clinician should address these issues with sensitivity and recommend comfortable alternatives that maintain a sense of containment without impeding movement. The goal is not to enforce a particular style, but to support the conditions under which the body can breathe naturally and effectively. Children and adolescents may require special attention in this area. School uniforms, fashion pressures, and athletic wear often promote restrictive styles that interfere with diaphragmatic breathing. Educating both the client and caregivers about the impact of clothing on respiratory function helps normalize the conversation and empowers families to create supportive environments. Simple strategies, such as changing into looser clothing before practice or adjusting the waistband of pants, can make a substantial difference. School-based breathing interventions should also consider dress codes and peer expectations, ensuring that practice conditions align with physiological goals. Ultimately, clothing is not a trivial concern in respiratory training. It serves as a modifiable environmental factor that can either facilitate or obstruct diaphragmatic engagement. By encouraging clients to dress in ways that support abdominal expansion and comfort, clinicians reinforce the broader principle that breathing retraining involves the whole body, not just the lungs. Clients learn to approach breath training as a practice of embodiment, where attention to detail, including clothing, translates into measurable physiological and psychological gains. Practice breathing basics. Practicing breathing basics forms the core of any effective respiratory retraining protocol, providing clients with the foundation to rebuild adaptive respiratory behavior from the ground up. While breathing is an automatic function, its unconscious execution is often compromised by chronic stress, poor posture, and maladaptive learning. Teaching clients to practice the essentials, nasal breathing, diaphragmatic engagement, and smooth rhythmic pacing restores coherence between respiratory mechanics and metabolic demands. These basic skills must be introduced clearly and practiced repetitively to replace dysfunctional patterns such as thoracic breathing, frequent sighing, breath holding, or paradoxical respiration. Repetition builds familiarity, while structured guidance cultivates awareness of breathing mechanics that are typically neglected in daily life. Clients should first be instructed to inhale through the nose and exhale through either the nose or pursed lips, depending on their training goals. Nasal breathing is not merely a preference. It provides physiological benefits by filtering airborne particles, humidifying air, and producing nitric oxide, which enhances pulmonary oxygen absorption and promotes vasodilation. This is particularly important for individuals with allergies, asthma, or chronic sinus congestion, as bypassing the nasal pathways can contribute to mouth breathing and subsequent hyperventilation. Teaching clients to re-establish nasal inhalation may involve gradual desensitization for those with aversions or discomfort, and clinical referral may be necessary when structural obstructions are present. The emphasis on diaphragmatic breathing encourages clients to use the body's most efficient respiratory muscle, the diaphragm, to expand the lungs downward rather than relying on the upper chest and accessory muscles. Clinicians often begin by asking clients to lie supine with one hand on the chest and the other on the abdomen. The client is then guided to initiate each inhalation with abdominal expansion, keeping the chest relatively still. Visual and tactile feedback reinforce the proper pattern and help clients detect when they deviate toward thoracic activation. Once this foundational coordination is learned, clients can practice while seated and eventually while standing or during daily activities. The goal is to build automaticity so that diaphragmatic breathing becomes the default in both rest and stress conditions. Breathing should be practiced at a rhythm that supports physiological regulation, typically between 5 and 7 breaths per minute at rest. This rate supports respiratory sinus arrhythmia and engages parasympathetic pathways that facilitate calmness and emotional resilience. Clients should be instructed to exhale slightly longer than they inhale, often using a ratio of 4 seconds in and 6 seconds out. However, the exact ratio may be adapted to individual comfort and response. The breathing cycle should be smooth and continuous, without sudden gasps, breath holding, or forced transitions. Practicing with a breath pacer or auditory cue can help clients internalize this rhythm and reduce cognitive load during early sessions. Clothing, posture, and environmental context influence the effectiveness of breathing practice. Clients should be positioned comfortably, preferably in a quiet, low-distraction environment where their spine is supported and their abdomen is allowed to expand freely. A chair with a straight back and uncrossed legs, or a reclined position with knees bent and feet flat, supports natural breathing mechanics. As breathing becomes more efficient, clients often notice spontaneous warming in the hands or feet, improved clarity of thought, and decreased muscle tension, signs of increased parasympathetic activation, and improved peripheral circulation. These immediate physiological changes reinforce the value of the practice and provide motivating feedback. To promote generalization, clients should be encouraged to integrate breathing basics into routine activities. For example, they can practice diaphragmatic breathing while commuting, waiting in line, or preparing for a stressful interaction. These micro-practices help embed the skill into daily life, reducing reliance on structured sessions. Clinicians should review practice logs, provide encouragement, and troubleshoot challenges to reinforce adherence and refine technique. Over time, clients begin to report fewer episodes of breathlessness, reduced somatic anxiety, and greater resilience to stress, all outcomes directly linked to the restoration of healthy breathing. In essence, breathing basics are deceptively simple but profoundly transformative. By reclaiming awareness and control over this foundational physiological rhythm, clients develop a tool that regulates effect, cognition, and somatic health. The practice of breathing becomes both a skill and a metaphor, demonstrating that change is possible, one breath at a time. Great posture promotes healthy breathing. Posture and breathing are inextricably linked through shared anatomical, biomechanical, and neurological pathways. Teaching clients to adopt and maintain great posture is therefore essential to support healthy respiratory function. In optimal posture, the spine is elongated, the shoulders are relaxed, and the diaphragm has room to descend unimpeded during inhalation. This alignment allows the lungs to expand downward and outward rather than upward into the chest, facilitating low-effort, diaphragmatic breathing. Conversely, slouched or collapsed postures compress the abdominal cavity, restrict diaphragmatic movement, and encourage shallow breathing in the thoracic region. The result is a reduced tidal volume, increased recruitment of accessory muscles, and elevated sympathetic tone, all of which interfere with respiratory efficiency and contribute to psychophysiological dysregulation. Clinicians must provide explicit instruction on how to achieve a posture that promotes respiratory ease. Whether seated or standing, the spine should be upright with its natural curves preserved, the head aligned over the shoulders, and the pelvis balanced to prevent anterior or posterior tilt. In sitting positions, the feet should rest flat on the floor, knees bent at 90 degrees, and the back supported but not rigid. Shoulders should remain level and relaxed, with the chest open but not exaggeratedly thrust forward. This configuration allows for an unobstructed descent of the diaphragm and facilitates abdominal expansion during inhalation. When posture is correct, clients often notice immediate changes in their breathing pattern, including slower respiratory rate, increased amplitude of abdominal movement, and reduced effort during both phases of the breath cycle. Clients frequently underestimate the role posture plays in their breathing habits and may not recognize that poor alignment contributes to symptoms such as fatigue, anxiety, or difficulty focusing. Habitual forward head posture, common among individuals who work at computers or use mobile devices for prolonged periods, reduces the efficiency of respiratory musculature and contributes to muscular tension in the neck and upper back. Similarly, clients who collapse into chairs, cross their legs tightly, or hunch over may be unaware that these postures inhibit diaphragmatic function. Clinicians should incorporate postural assessment into the initial evaluation and use mirrors, photographs, or physical modeling to raise awareness of misalignments. Clients benefit from immediate feedback and reinforcement when they make corrective changes. In some cases, postural correction requires more than verbal instruction. Clients with musculoskeletal limitations, chronic pain, or neuromuscular conditions may require gradual adjustments, physical therapy referral, or adaptive positioning strategies. For example, a client with scoliosis or lumbar instability may benefit from practicing breathing while lying supine with bent knees and lumbar support to minimize strain. Clients with limited hip mobility may require alternative seating arrangements that promote spinal extension without provoking discomfort. Chairs with lumbar support, wedge cushions, or standing desks can enhance posture during daily activities and facilitate more natural breathing patterns. The goal is to match the client's physical capacity with a posture that enables, rather than restricts, respiratory flow. Posture is not just a biomechanical concern. It carries powerful psychological and emotional associations. Upright posture has been linked to increased positive effect, improved mood, and greater resilience to stress. Encouraging clients to practice breathing in postures of strength and openness can shift their emotional tone and foster a sense of agency. In mindfulness and somatic therapies, posture is viewed as both a reflection of and a contributor to mental state. For clients with depression, trauma histories, or anxiety disorders, learning to adopt postures that support breathing can become part of a broader therapeutic narrative of reclaiming physical space, embodying presence, and enhancing safety. These associations deepen the impact of posture-focused interventions and align respiratory training with whole-person care. To reinforce good posture as a breathing aid, clinicians should encourage clients to incorporate postural awareness into their everyday routines. Checking alignment before meetings, while commuting, or during computer work can become cues for both posture correction and breath awareness. Using reminders, such as sticky notes, phone alarms, or body scanning exercises, helps clients build the habit of alignment-conscious breathing. Over time, these adjustments become automatic, and clients begin to experience less tension, more energy, and greater emotional regulation. The alignment of the body becomes a scaffold for the alignment of the breath, and together they promote a state of physiological harmony. Enhance your client's respiratory feedback. Enhancing respiratory feedback is central to accelerating learning in breath training, as it transforms abstract physiological concepts into concrete, observable experiences. Biofeedback modalities such as capnometry, respirometry, and surface electromyography provide clients with real-time data about their breathing patterns, muscle engagement, and carbon dioxide regulation. This immediate, visualized feedback closes the loop between intention and effect, allowing clients to make precise adjustments and track their progress. Clients often arrive unaware of how they breathe. They may think their breathing is relaxed or deep, when in fact they are overbreathing or engaging accessory muscles excessively. When they see objective evidence, such as low end-tidal carbon dioxide or erratic respiratory waveforms, they gain insight into previously unconscious habits and are better able to modify them. Clinicians can employ a range of strategies to enhance this feedback and reinforce the use of the diaphragm. One simple method is to have clients place a hand on their abdomen and another on their upper chest while seated or lying supine. The goal is to produce visible abdominal movement during inhalation while minimizing motion in the chest and shoulders. This tactile feedback is particularly helpful during early training when clients are still developing proprioceptive awareness. For clients who struggle with interoception, adding a small weight, such as a 1-pound sandbag or a folded towel, to the abdomen can provide a kinesthetic anchor that reinforces diaphragmatic engagement. This weight should be light enough to avoid resistance, but heavy enough to cue the desired movement. Clients can also use visual feedback from a mirror to observe shoulder elevation, which often accompanies thoracic overbreathing. In more advanced settings, clinicians may integrate instrumentation. Capnometers provide precise, breath-by-breath readings of end-tidal carbon dioxide, allowing clients to observe the effects of their breathing on respiratory chemistry. When breathing is slow, regular, and diaphragmatic, end-tidal carbon dioxide typically rises toward the normative range of 35 to 45 millimeters of mercury. Clients learn to associate this biochemical improvement with sensations of warmth, calm, and focus. In contrast, when they overbreathe or engage in effortful respiration, carbon dioxide levels drop rapidly, and symptoms such as lightheadedness or palpitations may emerge. This real-time cause and effect learning can be more powerful than verbal instruction and helps clients internalize the consequences of their breathing habits. Respirometers provide a continuous waveform of respiratory rate and amplitude, allowing clients to visualize their breathing rhythm. A smooth, sinusoidal pattern indicates coherent breathing, while erratic or shallow waveforms suggest dysregulation. This feedback is particularly valuable in helping clients regulate their breath and maintain a steady rhythm. Combining respirometer feedback with a breathing pacer, a visual or auditory guide that signals inhalation and exhalation phases, can further enhance coherence. Clients often find external pacing reassuring and easier to follow than self-directed timing, especially during early sessions or when they are anxious. Over time, the need for external pacing diminishes as the body entrains to a more stable rhythm. Surface electromyography, SEMG, is useful in monitoring accessory muscle activity, especially in the trapezius, scalenes, and sternocleidomastoid muscles. Elevated SEMG readings in these regions during quiet breathing suggest thoracic dominance and unnecessary muscular effort. When clients see the difference in SEMG output between thoracic and abdominal breathing, they gain a new appreciation for how much effort they have been expending in everyday respiration. Reducing this effort through conscious retraining not only conserves energy, but also downregulates the sympathetic nervous system. SEMG biofeedback can also support training for special populations such as individuals with trauma histories, where elevated muscle tone often reflects a defensive, hypervigilant state. Incorporating nature sounds, calming visuals, or soothing environments into feedback sessions can further support learning by reducing arousal and enhancing parasympathetic activation. Clients may practice breathing in front of animations such as a gently pulsing circle or a rising and falling landscape, which serve both as pacing tools and cues for relaxation. These multisensory supports create an immersive experience that strengthens the association between the breath and a state of safety. Clinicians should monitor for overstimulation and adjust sensory input based on individual tolerance. For some clients, simpler interfaces are more effective. Ultimately, enhancing respiratory feedback is not just about monitoring metrics. It is about cultivating body awareness, confidence, and a sense of control. Clients learn to recognize internal cues, correlate them with external feedback, and respond adaptively to these cues. This self-regulation skill generalizes to situations outside the clinical setting, enabling clients to utilize the breath as a stabilizing force in their daily lives. Through consistent practice, they come to view respiration not as an automatic function they must endure, but as a modifiable behavior they can master. Help clients recover their breathing reflex and correct overbreathing. Helping clients recover their breathing reflex and correct overbreathing is a central goal in respiratory biofeedback, especially when maladaptive patterns have become chronically ingrained. Overbreathing, defined as breathing in excess of metabolic demand, results in excessive elimination of carbon dioxide, leading to a state of hypocapnia that disrupts acid-base balance and impairs oxygen delivery to tissues. Clients often override their natural respiratory reflex, a chemoreceptor-mediated mechanism that triggers the next breath when carbon dioxide levels reach a certain threshold. In habitual overbreathers, this threshold becomes blunted, and the urge to inhale prematurely is reinforced, particularly during stress or anxiety. The result is a dysfunctional feedback loop in which early inhalation suppresses the natural accumulation of carbon dioxide, leading to chronic physiological dysregulation and somatic complaints. The first step in correcting overbreathing is to assess the pattern without judgment and educate the client about its physiological consequences. Many clients are unaware they are overbreathing because their respiratory rate appears normal or only slightly elevated. However, capnometry often reveals that their end-tidal carbon dioxide levels are consistently below the normative threshold of 35 millimeters of mercury. These clients may breathe with a low tidal volume and rapid exhalation, leading to carbon dioxide washout despite seemingly shallow breaths. Symptoms such as dizziness, tingling, chest tightness, or air hunger are mistakenly attributed to insufficient oxygen when in fact they result from excessive carbon dioxide loss. Clinicians must clarify this physiology to help clients reinterpret their symptoms and reduce catastrophic misattributions. Intervention begins with reestablishing the integrity of the breathing reflex. Clients must learn to delay the initiation of the next breath until carbon dioxide has sufficiently accumulated. This can feel counterintuitive or uncomfortable at first, especially for those who associate shortness of breath with danger or loss of control. Clinicians can support this process by introducing extended exhalations, post-exhalatory pauses, and guided paced breathing to restore chemoreceptor sensitivity. The focus should be on allowing the breath rather than forcing it, breathing slowly through the nose with gentle abdominal movement, and accepting the natural pause that emerges after exhalation. This pause is critical because it signals a return to reflexive, rather than reactive, control of breathing. Tactile feedback strategies can assist in this retraining. Clients can place their hands on the abdomen or use a light weight to emphasize diaphragmatic movement and enhance awareness of when the next breath is genuinely needed rather than impulsively initiated. Practicing while lying on the back with knees bent can further facilitate diaphragmatic recruitment and minimize accessory muscle engagement. As clients begin to experience the feeling of a regulated breath cycle, they often report a sense of internal stability and calm that contrasts sharply with the restless urgency of overbreathing. These somatic cues reinforce the learning and help to consolidate a healthier pattern. Overbreathing often co-occurs with thoracic dominance, in which the external intercostal muscles and accessory muscles of respiration compensate for poor diaphragmatic control. Clients who thoracically overbreathe not only disrupt gas exchange, but also increase upper body muscle tension, contributing to chronic neck and shoulder discomfort. Helping these clients recruit the diaphragm more fully involves cueing expansion of the lower ribs and abdomen while minimizing chest elevation. Visual feedback through respirometry and electromyography can show clients when they are engaging in thoracic versus abdominal breathing, increasing both awareness and motivation to change. Clients may need repeated, structured practice to overcome muscle memory and long-standing somatic habits. Correcting overbreathing also involves modifying cognitive and emotional factors that contribute to its maintenance. Many clients overbreathe in response to stress, worry, or vigilance, particularly those with anxiety disorders or trauma histories. In these cases, overbreathing serves as a defensive behavior, a physiological attempt to gain control or suppress distressing effect. Clinicians must address these cognitive drivers directly and integrate breathing training with psychoeducation, cognitive restructuring, and mindfulness techniques to effectively support patients. Clients should be reminded that the goal is not to suppress breathing, but to restore its natural, adaptive rhythm. Encouraging curiosity, non-judgment, and present moment awareness helps reduce performance anxiety and fosters a more sustainable engagement with the breath. Ultimately, recovering the breathing reflex and correcting overbreathing is a process of retraining the body to trust its own signals. It requires patience, repetition, and the careful use of feedback to guide internal awareness. When clients succeed, they often describe a profound sense of relief and empowerment. Their breath, once a source of distress or confusion, becomes a reliable anchor for stability, regulation, and self-care. Encourage practice with breathing apps and breath pacers. Encouraging the use of breathing apps and breath pacers provides clients with accessible, structured tools to practice healthy respiration outside of the clinical setting. These tools serve as external guides that reinforce pacing, rhythm, and effortlessness, which are often difficult to self-regulate without continuous feedback. Breathing apps and pacers offer audiovisual cues, such as expanding circles, pulsing lights, or sound patterns, to indicate inhalation, exhalation, and pause durations, helping clients entrain their breath to a regulated tempo. These cues reduce the cognitive load associated with self-monitoring, allowing clients to focus on the somatic experience of breathing. They are especially valuable in the early stages of training, when clients may struggle with internal awareness or find it challenging to maintain consistent breathing patterns independently. There is a wide range of breathing pacers available, from computer-based programs and web applications to smartphone apps compatible with both iOS and Android systems. Clinicians may recommend specific platforms such as Coherence Coach or Easy Air Plus for desktop use, and a variety of mobile apps tailored to paced breathing for portable use. These tools often allow for customization of breathing rates, ratio settings, and visual themes, enabling a personalized experience that aligns with the client's resonance frequency or relaxation goals. Clients with asthma, anxiety, or attention deficit concerns may benefit from slower rates of 4 to 6 breaths per minute, while others may work up to these paces as they become more familiar with breath control. The ability to fine-tune these parameters supports gradual progress and prevents frustration associated with overly ambitious settings. Assigning daily practice with a breathing pacer builds behavioral momentum and reinforces neurophysiological learning. Clinicians should provide specific instructions, including target duration, for example, 5 to 10 minutes per session, optimal times, for example, upon waking, before sleep, or after stress exposure, and environmental conditions, for example, a quiet space and a supportive posture. Clients benefit from consistent scheduling and may use smartphone reminders or practice logs to track adherence. Many apps include built-in tracking features that allow users to monitor session frequency and duration, providing reinforcing feedback that supports long-term habit formation. Clinicians should review this data during sessions to praise effort, troubleshoot obstacles, and adjust pacing parameters as needed. In addition to structured practice, breathing apps can be used in situational applications to manage acute stress, enhance performance, or prepare for challenging interactions. Clients may use breath pacers before giving a presentation, entering a crowded space, or during transitions between emotionally taxing events. The portability of mobile apps ensures that clients are not dependent on the clinical environment for self-regulation and can carry their practice into daily life. Over time, they begin to internalize the rhythm provided by the pacer, making it easier to self-pace in the absence of external cues. This transfer from extrinsic to intrinsic control marks an important milestone in respiratory training and supports generalized regulation. Clinicians should ensure that clients are oriented to the proper use of these tools and that they understand the difference between guided breathing and breath holding or forced control. Some clients may try to keep up with pacers at the expense of comfort or coherence, which can lead to overbreathing or distress. The pacing signal should always be viewed as a guide, not a demand, and clients should be encouraged to prioritize smoothness and comfort over strict adherence. If a pacer feels too fast or too slow, the setting should be adjusted to align with the client's physiological range. Early sessions may involve real-time practice with the clinician using the same pacer, followed by feedback on how well the client's actual breathing synchronizes with the visual or auditory guide. Ultimately, breathing apps and pacers are valuable adjuncts that bridge the gap between clinic and home. They provide structure, feedback, and flexibility in a user-friendly format that enhances client autonomy. When used consistently and with appropriate clinical oversight, these tools significantly increase the likelihood of successful respiratory retraining and the maintenance of gains beyond the treatment period. Clients come to view breath pacing not as a therapeutic exercise, but as a portable skill they can use anywhere, anytime, to regulate arousal, support performance, and maintain physiological balance.